This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Well, this sucks. It's all good, man.
I should stop talking shit about Trudeau. Is that?
No. Any shit you talk about that guy is going to be true.
Too good.
How's your neck of the woods?
Nothing really to complain about. I've got to love Montana here. I mean, I'm stuck in Gallatin County, which is, there's a reason they call Bozeman, Bo's Angeles. But other than that, and fighting with the random haters out here, it's pretty good. Still have to fight against some people with masks. Everywhere else in Montana is pretty much open. There's certain spots in Bozeman that are still, excuse me, sir, do you need a mask?
I don't think that's going to be a while, I think, before that crap goes away. At least you guys, man, we're still in, we got so much shit we're dealing with up here, but they just restricted an in-province travel ban.
Yeah, I was going to say, aren't you guys like fully locked down at the moment or something crazy like that?
Yeah, we're not as bad as Ontario, but man, we're not far off.
Oh, geez. Where are you at again?
British Columbia, Kelowna.
Okay.
Down in the sunny part of the country. A few of them.
Oh, man. Yeah, one of these days, I've always wanted to get up there, always wanted to do some hunting, and was hoping to do that, you know, within the next year or two, but who knows at this point, man? Like, it's just wild.
Yeah, this shit's gonna leave everything a little different up here in terms of guys coming up to hunt. I don't know, but yeah, we'll see. But there's a lot of critters up here to hunt anyway.
Oh yeah, no, I mean, it's there's a lot I want to get up there and do. Get up there for some moose, get up there for some caribou. I definitely missed my chance on the grizzly, I guess. But
oh man, that fucking
that just your reaction, man. I know that was kind of pardon the pun, but that was kind of poking the bear right there on that one.
that's, you know, that it's just such an
too soon, too yeah. Soon, man. Oh, I'm an asshole. I apologize.
It's just such an unpragmatic, like, the whole thing was just a crock of shit, right? Like, they. In 2017, when an unelected government took power, that was one of their first initiatives, is that they said, okay, listen, we promised guys that we're going to ban this hunt. But then a few guys from the GOABC, the Guide Outfitters of British Columbia, they kind of stepped in and said, no, we need some background on this. We need some science-based facts here before you just shut this down. And the understanding was that what they were going to do was, like, originally, before the ban, you didn't have to take the meat out. You could just take the hide and and that was it. So the understanding was that they were going to switch it to like the Black Bear. And then in late 2017, early 2018, they just came across and did a flat out ban. This is basically, there you go. That's pretty much it.
Jeez.
So
that's so wild. I mean, it's, you know, I mean, I'm from, you know, you've kind of followed my story for a while. You know, I'm from California.
Yeah.
And it's the same kind of, it's the same kind of horseshit over there. You know, hey, you know, we need to ban mountain lion hunting. Why? Because I like kitties. Like, fuck you, dude. Like, what legitimate basis? Same thing with, you know, we still have black bear hunting out there. I got to get out of the habit of saying we, because I'm no longer part of that we. But there's still black bear hunting out there. But they cut back on any sort of baiting, trapping, or running dogs. So, you know, the quota's never met for black bear. They banned bobcat hunting. Why? because I have feelings and I'm from California. Gosh, fuck you guys. Like, honestly, kills me.
We deal with the same shit up here. You get, like, in British Columbia, the majority of the population is down in Vancouver and Victoria area. And that's where all the politics, you know, all the decisions that are made out of those two places, and they don't see anything that's going on in the rest of the province. But, and then all of a sudden, a little dog gets taken by a coyote or a cougar, and then they're hypocrites saying, well, what are we doing about these cougars? Like, it's totally hypocritical then, right? Like, now it's affecting them, so now they're a problem.
So should I start referring to BC as like the California of Canada?
Is that it's getting bad, man. Now they're trying, now, I don't know if it's fell in on the lap of the government yet, but there's a lot of anti-hunting animal rights activists up here. I mean, same as everywhere else. And they're trying to, after all predator hunting in the province. But I mean, like, it's like the grizzly bear. They're going to have a problem with grizzly bears here in the next couple of years. Cause I spend a lot of time in the backcountry, and I've seen, you know, I start to see grizzly bears where I've never seen them before, and they're getting a little closer,
man. It's like, can we just section off like a good chunk of Canada and maybe like, you know, Montana and Idaho and Colorado, just section off these nice mountain states here and create a new United States up there, and then like ship all the anti-hunters and folks of that nature. You know, we can send them to the East Coast here. You know, we can send them, just kind of section off these good states, make a new United States and a new Canada, just kind of restructure it, so we get the good people in one spot, and the people can have exactly what they want in their countries, because that's totally doable.
I kind of laugh at that, because we've talked about that a number of times, me and some friends and some other colleagues. Just, they should have split Canada and the U.S. down the other way.
Yeah.
we can take everybody interested in the outdoors, hunting, fishing, and that sort of lifestyle. We can take the West. We can let everyone overcrowd the East who doesn't want anything to do with that.
I mean, the Southern states could come along. They're pretty cool, I guess. You know, we could allow them in. It's a little different, but, you know.
Anyway, man, first off, love the podcast. You know, I've been working my way backwards through them for a little bit now here, and see, you had a few good old Canadian boys recently on your show, Jim and Greg.
Yep. Yeah. That's actually the second time I've had Jim on. Trying to think if I've had any other Canadians on the podcast.
Yeah, you had Rachel Attila on there.
Yeah. Yeah. I had Rachel, had Jim, Greg, Mikhail. I feel like there might be one more floating around in there somewhere. I'll have to do a good old search on the podcast page and give it a check. But
yeah, hey, those are the only three I've gotten to so far. But Jim and Greg, I had Greg on my show. He's a beauty.
Oh yeah, all three of those podcasts were so different. Talked about so many different things, and you know, it's just cool getting a chance to talk with people from any and every like perspective and angle and walk of life in the, you know, in the outdoor world. And, you know, even some from without, and I've had some cool conversations about hunting with folks that aren't really hunters, or, you know, just getting into it. Oh, you know who else I've had on? He was on a bonus episode, and it was a really interesting one. I did an Instagram live. You familiar with Robin Black?
The name sounds familiar.
He is an MMA commentator, and he's a Canadian dude. He's like buddies with Joe Rogan and this and that. And one of my employees actually was like, hey, you need to talk to this guy. And so we start talking, and he's like, he used to be in the music industry. Like, you would look at this guy, you're like, why on earth would you talk to this guy about hunting? And he does some amazing videos on Instagram. He calls them the 1 minute breakdowns, and he'll like break down the key moments in a fight in 1 minute. But then he'll also do the same thing for like two bums fighting on the street, or like one insect eating another. And it's hilarious. But yeah, I had him on, and he's this wild dude. And we're talking, and he's like, oh yeah, no, I grew up like trapping with my grandfather in Canada. I'm like, what? And yeah, so that's the other. I was like, I know I had one other Canadian dude on, but that was an interesting one because it's such a different perspective. And it was an Instagram live, so it was a bit weird. It wasn't like an official podcast, but I released it on the podcast. It was a fun one though. It was a really cool, different thing to talk about.
No doubt, I'll check that out. Sounds like a neat dude for sure. Yeah, and you had Jim on twice. He's pretty much. Well, Jim's like Wayne Gretzky up here. He's pretty much the man. He's pretty much the man, I think, in terms of hunting in any country, though.
Oh, absolutely. Like, he's just, I don't know, he's just kind of one of the originals, like, that really defines so much about hunting to a lot of people, myself included. And having the chance to have him on, you know, that's the second time I've had him on. First time I had him on, you know, I was one of those days where I'm like, you know, just shoot for gold here. Like, I had released, you know, maybe 20 podcasts or so at that point. You know, so I had some under my belt, but I was like, all right, shoot, you know, shoot for gold. I just reached out on Instagram, like, on the off chance he might see it. Like, the next day he gets back to me and he's like, oh man, sorry, it took me so long to get back to you. And I was kind of like, you're Jim Shockey. You could have gotten back to me in 6 years and I still would have been happy. But yeah. And, you know, he's like, yeah, I'd love to be on the podcast. Just shoot an email and we'll follow up. And I'm kind of like, okay, you know, I'll shoot the email and I won't, you know, hear back from his assistant or whatever. And I get it, you know. Then the next day I get an email back and like, oh, when would you like to schedule it? And we get it all scheduled. And I'm still expecting it not to go through the entire time. I'm like, something's going to happen. Like, there's no way Jim Shockey's coming on my podcast. And the entire time I was talking with him that first episode, I was just entranced. I kept forgetting to ask questions because I was so just focused on listening to him and what he had to share and what he was saying. And there's a couple of times where I was waiting for the podcast host to ask his next question when I had to realize that, oh shit, I'm the podcast host.
Yeah, I get it, man. It's funny how you get that. It just happens. I've gone through it for sure. And obviously I'm nowhere near as experienced as you are, but man, that's pretty cool. I haven't reached out to Jim or anything yet, but I mean, we're both from BC and maybe one day I'll get him on the show. But yeah, Jim's pretty much, like I said, Jim's pretty much the man when it comes to hunting for sure.
Well, that's one of the cool things is like, especially in the hunting industry. And that's honestly part of the reason why my podcast became a hunting podcast. Originally, it was supposed to be a wider variety of kind of quote unquote country things. And it kind of became a hunting podcast because the caliber of people that are willing to talk to someone that's, I mean, effectively a nobody, like I haven't done much of anything to speak of compared to a lot of these guys. But the fact that they're willing to come and hop on my podcast and spend an hour and a half talking to me, answering my questions, like the accessibility and the willingness of these people to do that is wild to me. Like, that is absolutely crazy. And, you know, it's such an open community. It's a really cool community. And, you know, I wouldn't be where I'm at today if it wasn't for that openness in the community, for me just reach out to someone on Instagram and they're, you know, a week later, suddenly I'm talking with him. So,
yeah, no, totally, dude. You know, the hunting community is definitely a niche group of individuals, that's for sure. But maybe Sam, maybe before we get too far down the road here, maybe you can just start off by letting the folks up here in Canada know who you are. Maybe throw in your last name too, so I don't mess up the pronunciation of it.
Oh yeah, no, it's all good. I'll give you the whole rundown. So I'm Sam Ayres. And not Aries, not Ayres, not Ayres. So now all the telemarketers know how to ask for me. Long story short, I did not grow up hunting. My experience with the outdoors is every summer we'd spend 2 weeks in this place in kind of Southern California area in Kings Canyon and Sequoia National Forest called Hume Lake. It's a beautiful area. You know, those are two beautiful areas, you know, with the redwoods and some of the biggest trees in North America, and rivers and lakes. And I grew up there, and we'd go out there for 2 weeks, and I grew up fishing, you know, just spin reel fishing for stocked rainbow trout off the same like two or three rocks for probably since the time I was three. I caught my first fish there. But that was really my experience with the outdoors. It was always a vacation thing. Sometimes I'd go on a camp or do some stuff with my school, whatever it may be, but that was how I grew up. And, I started just going through high school and into college. I started getting into advertising and all of this technical digital stuff. Wanted to get into advertising, wanted to work in LA. I was that guy that, I wanted to wear three-piece suits, have the penthouse apartment in the middle of downtown LA. I wanted to work with high-end ad clients. I was driving a little two-seat Roadster convertible. That was my dream. And, it's a really long story about how that all changed, but effectively I got into guns, and through getting into guns and through getting into some other stuff and meeting a few different people, my interest started changing. And over the course of a couple of years, I went from this city kind of dude into all of a sudden, I'm this bearded, tattooed guy that's wearing cowboy boots, getting into hunting. And I just developed this passion. And really the whole reason I started this podcast and how it kind of came about was, I was, I'd picked up a bow for the first time in years. I'd been getting interested in hunting because of shooting. And I was at Bass Pro. I was visiting my brother at the time, lived right next to a Bass Pro. And so I go into this Bass Pro and I was just going to price out a bow. And they saw a sucker coming from a mile away, man. I'll tell you what, they saw me walk in. I was eyeballing the bows, and they sent over the pretty blonde, sales girl. And before I knew it, I blacked out and I woke up in my car about $650 poorer with a new bow and I don't even know what happened. I don't even remember half of that. But, after that, it was all, downhill from there. Like I just lost myself into it, started shooting, and I was out, off-roading. I was shooting guns. I was going to country concerts. I was going to these line dancing nights, and I had these friends asked me, they're like, oh, I didn't know you could do that in LA. How do you do that? Where do you go to do that? And I was like, well, I should start like a blog and an Instagram for this just to share it. And I was like, okay, what do I call it? And I went about as on the nose as I possibly could. And it was called Living Country in the City. After a while, I realized that I just did not like blogging. I was good at it, but I just did not enjoy the time it took to do that. But I love talking to people. And I had some people encourage me to start a podcast. I'm like, well, I've never been hunting before, but it's about all of this other stuff. And so I started this podcast, and then suddenly I recorded one episode with a country trio in Los Angeles. The second episode was about hunting, and the subsequent, 197 episodes after that were all about hunting and fishing. But I started the whole podcast because I wanted to share what I was doing with my friends. And I had no background in hunting. I wanted to kind of chronicle my journey of getting into it, as well as have an excuse to just reach out to really cool people and be like, hey, again, like Jim Shockey, hey, can I ask you about hunting and conservation for the next 2 hours? Corey Jacobson, elk calling, can I just pick your brain for the next hour? And effectively, I'm just sharing, letting people be a fly on the wall for those conversations, like between two hunting buddies, or those things you would miss out on just watching watching an instructional video. And because I didn't have that community at the time, This was my way to develop it and to reach out to other people that didn't have that community, that aren't going to have those conversations, that aren't able to sit down with, their dad and learn about, how to take an ethical shot, to sit down with their grandpa and learn about how to be quiet and stalking in the woods, or just who don't have that group of buddies to sit down and share hunting stories with. And that's really why I started it. And believe it or not, that's actually the short version. I could have gone on just on how I got into this and how it all got started for hours. But that's kind of the background. That's who I am now. At the time I was living in California, I moved out of Los Angeles, started working remotely at my full-time job. About a year later, a little under a year later, I quit my full-time job, started running my own business, working with companies, doing marketing in the outdoor industry. And at the time, I just kind of realized that my, living country in the city doesn't feel authentic anymore. It's time for the brand to grow up a little bit and to unpigeonhole myself with what I'm doing. And so I rebranded it to the Wild Initiative. I thought a lot about that name. And really, the idea is that, it is an initiative for me still. I'm not this person that's native to the mountains. I'm a city boy that fell in love with hunting, fishing, and the outdoors. And so this is still, I may be now, another year after that, I ended up moving to Montana. I'm living outside of Bozeman in Belgrade, Montana right now. But this is all still an initiative for me, an initiative for the wild. And that's really the whole idea behind the new name, the new brand. But the mission's still the same, just to share all this awesome information and great stories with as many people as I can.
Yeah. Well, you can definitely tell you're passionate about it, and you can hear it in your voice, man.
Just a little bit.
So backing up a bit, you said you got into guns. What do you mean you got into guns? Like down in LA, I don't imagine. I mean, like up here in Canada, we can, well, not so much anymore, but I remember when we used to grow up, we used to put our 22 on our back and just go into the woods and just shoot beer cans or pop cans. Now you got into guns. How did you do that in LA? And like, how did that stem into going from just getting into guns to getting into hunting? Because you said you didn't have, a grandfather or father type hunting figure to look up to.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up with like a BB gun, and I'd shoot targets in the backyard. And then when my mom wasn't looking, I'd also shoot pigeons off the roof. I got caught doing that and yelled at a couple of times. But, my dad taught me a lot of stuff. He taught me how to fish. He taught me, how to shoot my BB gun, but it just wasn't a thing in our family. We didn't hunt. If I had gone to my parents and been like, hey, I want to learn to shoot guns, or I want to hunt, they would have been like, okay, let's figure it out and find someone to teach you, or we'll learn it all together. But it was just, I never had that prompting when I was young. And I grew up in Seal Beach. I grew up going, riding my bike to the beach all the time. That was kind of my environment. And so it wasn't, I had shot guns once or twice growing up, my brother-in-law's brother, he had a 22 that I shot once or twice. My brother had a pistol back in the day that we went out on, like, it was like a men's retreat with our church. And we went out to the desert and all the guys brought their guns and I shot, a 9mm a couple of times there. But that was pretty much it. Late 20s or early 30s, whatever it was. Go to Vegas with all the guys, for a bachelor party. And we go to the gun store and, start shooting the guns. And I tell you what, it's a lot of people, I laugh at myself for it, but I shot the 50 cal Desert Eagle. And I was like, this is the baddest motherfucker I've ever done. Like, I was so stoked on that thing. It was like, you just feel it reverberating through your whole body. I'm like, this is freaking awesome. I want to shoot more guns. And so after that trip, I went out and I bought a freaking Desert Eagle. I knew for a fact it was the most unnecessary oversized pistol I could buy. And it totally, who cared? I just wanted to shoot this big ass pistol. And so I loved shooting that. Buddy of mine knew I liked to shoot guns and he brought me out and he's like, hey, for my birthday, I want to do this. It's like a rifle marksmanship program. You go out and you kind of camp for the weekend. It's like a weekend clinic. You learn some history. You learn the basics of shooting a rifle. And so I went and picked up my first Ruger 10/22 for that event. And I after the first event, I fell in love with it. They do a test. They give you basic training. You do a test at the end and you can graduate. And it's based on the old style Army qualification shooting tests, the AQT tests. It's kind of a size down version that you do with 22s. But, you know, I kept going back to that course until I shot my score. Then I started instructing with that. And I've always been one of those people that when I get into something, like, I go whole hog. And so, I mean, I taught, I bought, you know, ended up buying more rifles. I started getting into vintage rifles, larger calibers, distance shooting. I loved all that. I did some competitions where, you know, I didn't do great, but I placed well enough. And, you know, I started getting good enough to where I was starting to lose interest in it because punching paper just wasn't satisfying anymore. And that's really what prompted me to get into hunting. Was that's how the rifle marksmanship, the rifle part turned into hunting, was I just needed something else to do with it. So a new skill to learn. I needed a purpose behind shooting more than just getting good at shooting, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. No, that's cool, man. It's always cool to hear how people get involved in hunting, from, you know, maybe a little later on in life. You know, like myself, I got into hunting early. My dad hunted. So when we were 8 years old, we went hunted with dad. So it's kind of just a thing, but you know, it's interesting with that, with what you touched on there, and people who do decide to get into hunting later on in life, you know, there's so much more online content that's, you know, like maybe like an online mentorship available for people now through podcasts, YouTube. And who did you look up to for hunting, or did you kind of just go out and do it all on your own?
It was a mix of both. I didn't really find that mentor that's like, okay, I'm going to show you all the ropes and take you out and do this. You know, my archery is almost completely self-taught. You know, after I'd been doing it for a year or so, I got some pointers and tips from people, but, you know, I went out and I watched a lot of YouTube videos and kind of taught myself how to shoot and the basics and figured out what worked and what didn't. And you know, then I'd listen to a lot of different podcasts or, watch videos online if I was having trouble with something specific. But you know, I started kind of getting into hunting, but then I was lucky enough, I started a new job and, you know, deep in the music industry in the middle of Los Angeles. And so I'm kind of like, you know, I'm trying to get into hunting and all of this. And I'm like, great. I'm in one of the most liberal industries, you know, short of the film and television industry. It's about as liberal as it possibly can get. And, you know, this group, let's just say this group that I was working for, Golden Voice, they run an event called Eat, Drink, Vegan. So if that tells you anything, you know, it's just was not the most hunting friendly place. But so I'm in this, you know, we have a lot of these like large status meetings, and I'm sitting there and I got my boots on, I got my camo cover on my laptop, and there's a guy sitting across from me, Samson. And he was actually my second ever podcast interview was with him. And he's wearing a Kuyu puffy. And at the time, I didn't know what Kuyu was. I was just like, oh, it's a camo puffy. I wonder if I was like, kind of like, is it like fashion puff? Is it like a fashion vest, or is it actually like a hunting vest? So I'm checking it out. I'm like, this guy doesn't seem like he's going to be wearing like a fashion camo vest or anything. So I'm like, but how do I kind of bring it up in a delicate way to where I don't get like reamed by HR or something for who knows at this point? And so I kind of go up into his office and I'm like, okay, I got to figure out a way to talk to this guy. I go look in and he's got an elk bugling on his computer screensaver. I'm like, okay, that's a good sign. Then the next one, it like kind of scrolls past and it's the next one is like a diagram of an elk with all the cuts of meat.
Oh yeah.
Diagram. I'm like, okay, no, I think I'm fine to go talk to this guy.
I'm good.
Yeah. So, you know, I'd been talking to him and I talked to him about elk hunting and I'm like, hey man, you know, that looks amazing. I'd love to do that someday. You know, when I have about a bunch more money and when I have a lot more experience, he's like, why wait? And I'm like, I can't, you know, afford to pay $50,000. And cause that was what it was in my mind. For me, hunting was like sitting in a tree stand waiting for deer to come out. I didn't know anything else. I figured the sort of backcountry hunting stuff that everyone does out west here was something unattainable, out of reach, unless you were steeped in hunting knowledge and you had a lot of money to spend on gear and outfitters. And I didn't even think you could DIY hunt this stuff. And he was like, no, dude, you could do it this season. This is about January of 2017. And he's like, no, bro, you could do this season. Like, I'm like, you're kidding, right? He's like, no. And he sat down and really talked me through a lot of stuff. And then, you know, over the course of the next several, you know, weeks and months, he introduced me. He's like, you know, this is kind of the different types of gear you want to invest in. This is what you want to look at. Here's some brands you can check out, find what works for you. Here's some podcasts to listen to. Here's some video channels to do, you know, go sign up for Elk 101, do all this stuff. And, you know, he was also one of the ones that really encouraged me to start this podcast, to reach out to people and to, again, chronicle me getting into it. And he's like, you'll have a cool, unique voice that's not present in the industry at the time. And I was just like, okay, cool. But yeah, he was really about as close as I got to a mentor initially. But you know, there was tons of people, tons of podcasts I would listen to and incredible information out there. And, you know, I mean, I sat down, I listened to a crap ton of Cody Rich podcast, The Rich Outdoors, listened to tons of Randy Newberg. I listened to Jay Scott, which, well, I'll be honest, most of Jay Scott went way over my head at the time. He would talk about stuff that was just a little technical for me sometimes, but listened to a lot of, you know, Gritty Bowman back when he and Aaron were doing stuff together. I mean, I would just consume podcasts because, I mean, I was commuting an hour each way every day. And so I could hammer out a lot of podcasts while I was at work, while I was on my commute. I consumed a lot. I've always been a studier. I joined Elk 101. I was on all of the forums, all of the Facebook groups, got involved with conservation organizations to make those connections. And really, I just went whole hog at it. I consumed as much information as possible. I met some incredible people along the way because of it.
Yeah, well, definitely. And that's one of the coolest things about having your own podcast is you actually get a chance to talk to, you know, amazing guys in the industry. And you get to also share that with, you know, other people who may not have access to that directly. But yeah, no, that's cool, man. It's always cool to hear people's story. And again, you know, it's something that the industry is just sort of so neat how this industry is, where everybody's willing to just share information. I mean, you know, most of the people I knew, they went out hunting with their dad, right? So they grew up, you know, it's just, you follow that family lineage that your dad hunted, you hunt sort of thing. So it's always so neat to find stories of guys who get into it later and just how they had access. And you said you started out archery hunting yourself. Like, you just picked up a bow and you just went at it. It's amazing. You stuck with it because, you know, I kind of cheated. My cousin, he was like BC champion. So I didn't really have any of those bad. He kind of just said, hey, no, don't do this. Don't do that. Do this, do this, don't do that. And I kind of just like skipped a whole shitload of these bad habits that people gain. But I know a lot of guys who got into it, they just picked it up. And then within a year, they put it down. They just didn't stick with it because it's just too hard to learn.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those funny things that it was rifles that got me into hunting. And then I went and picked up a bow. It was rifles that initially sparked that interest. Then I went and picked up a bow and I didn't even touch a rifle for probably about 3 years. It wasn't until, you know, 2019 that I actually really took my rifle out hunting, like of my own volition. it's just a funny thing, man. There's something about, and I always tell people, like, I did not do this in the wisest way. You know, I love my passion for bow hunting and how much I appreciate the work I've put in. And, you know, it's taught me a lot of lessons. I can't fully say that I would do it exactly the same if I had a chance to do it all over again. I look back and I'm proud of kind of what I've achieved and the work I've put in, but I also look back and I'm like, maybe I should have gone on a few duck hunts first or put in for an over-the-counter rifle tag somewhere, or maybe figured that out a little bit better before deciding.
Dip your toes before you dive off the deep end.
Exactly. You know, and I say that, but let's face it, that is not my personality, and that's never going to happen with anything I ever do. I mean, come on. I've never in my life just eased my way into something. I'm like, all right, I'm going to do this. So how do I do it completely and wholly? I fell in love with it, man. I was the sucker. I fell in love with that romantic picture of the hunt, you know, the solo DIY mountain hunt for elk. I mean, you know, you want to talk about a freaking cool romantic animal. Like, that's the elk, man. The bugles, they're just enormous animals. That whole thing, like, there's nothing like that. And, you know, people can talk about mule deer hunting all they want, bear hunting, you know, caribou, moose, whatever it is, but nothing compares to the elk hunt. It's just, there's something special about it. A lot of hunts are amazing. Elk hunting is, there's just a magic to it that is absolutely unbeatable in my mind. And I fell in, like, before I'd ever even gone, just watching these videos, watching these hunts, I fell in love with that romantic picture. And I was going to do what it took to be part of that. And so for me, my first hunt, I prepped, you know, from January to September, I prepped. And my first hunt was a DIY over-the-counter archery elk hunt, completely solo in Idaho. And I tell you what, it was a freaking disaster. It was a shit show of epic proportions. And, you know, I actually very literally just yesterday recorded episode 200 for my podcast. And, I had my buddy that came in and effectively rescued me, out of the backcountry. I had him on again, just to kind of recap, and I'm releasing the audio from that elk hunt. So every night I had my recorder with me. Every night before going to sleep, I would record for about 15 minutes or so. You know, sometimes it was shorter, sometimes it was longer, and talk about what I was feeling, how the day went, what I was thinking, all of that stuff. And so I'm going to be releasing that audio, and it's just the timing's kind of funny with all of this, but, you know, I fell in love with that picture, man. And it took me 4 years. That first year it was a disastrous hunt, and, you know, we can talk about that a little bit, but the year after that, I just harvested my first mule deer, that following year in Arizona, and then got invited up to go elk hunting with a buddy in Colorado. He's like, man, I got this spot. And the spot was empty. He's like, it was a war zone last year. We saw two cows the entire time we were there. We were there for 7 days. It was just brutal. We were, we were above 11,000 feet. I think we were right around 12 plus thousand feet. And I mean, for me, a flatlander, that was brutal. And then the year after that, I spent 6 weeks, in Montana chasing elk, out here. And I got to draw on an elk. I completely biffed the shot because I misranged it, and I probably wouldn't have even drawn if I had arranged it correctly, because they were way out there. They were about 85 yards, and but I got into them, and every year a little more happened. I improved a little bit, and finally this last year I went out with a buddy as a guide, because I drew an Arizona tag, and man, it was a grind. It was just the worst rut Arizona's had in 17 years. But you know what? We got it done. Finally, I got my first elk. It's a little 4-point raghorn, but I'll tell you what, that is one thing I was talking about on the podcast. I value this little raghorn so much more than any bull I'll ever shoot, because of the work that went into it, the history behind it, the 4 years spent just grinding out this passion of mine. And, yeah, it's like, it's been a wild freaking ride, man. A lot of stuff's happened along the way.
Getting an elk, it's no easy feat. It's not about the size, it's about the hunt. But cool to hear about your first story there.
This will be somewhat of the concise version. I did the whole podcast about it, where we really go into detail on what happened and what could have changed. But so I'd been doing all this studying, and I fell into the trap of like the listening to a little bit too much Randy Newberg, and I'm like, okay, you know, I got to get as far away from roads as possible. And so, you know, I figured out like where they're, you know, how I could get in. And I found this spot where ideally I'd drive way in, with my Jeep. I'd park, I'd have about a 2 mile hike in, you know, through some nasty stuff, but it was only about a 2 mile hike in. It'll be solid. Well, of course there's a gate that I just somehow missed. I didn't ask the right questions, and so there's a gate. So that two mile trip turns into 4 mile trip, which still not too bad. I've done, you know, I've done tons of that, but you know, I've been training. I'm like, this will be great. This will still be a good hike in. Well, it was a lot nastier than I expected. Like really, really thick and nasty. I was climbing over waist high deadfall. It was brutal. And so that 4 mile hike turned into more of a 7 mile hike in with all of the back and forth and crap, you know, trying to get back and forth and find a route down to these clearings that I wanted to hunt around. And the other issue with that is it had been in the 60s and 70s coming up to the, you know, in this area, coming up right up to my hunt. And pretty much the day I leave for the hunt, a giant snowstorm blows in. And, you know, that's one of the biggest things I learned from that hunt was just pack all your gear. If you're driving out, pack every single piece of gear you own in your truck. You know, it doesn't matter if you're in the middle of freaking July, and you're going down to the desert, pack your freaking snow gear. Like what's an extra tub in the back of your pickup truck really going to cost you? You know, a little bit of wind resistance on the drive down. So, you know, an extra $20 in gas, you know, pack all your gear because you never know what the hell is going to happen. It's unpredictable. And you don't want to have to go to Walmart and Sportsman's Warehouse and retrofit your gear with a bunch of stuff that's going to weigh too much, because then you're going to end up hiking into Idaho through over waist high deadfall that you can't tell what your how far your next step's going to be down, because it's also covered in snow. You know, your next step may be 2 inches, your next step may be 2 feet. And you don't want to have to load up your pack and suddenly be carrying way too much weight because you weren't able to optimize your pack with your own gear. You had to go buy a bunch of stuff last minute. And let's face it, you're not going to be spending all the money to get the ultra lightweight stuff. That was a huge lesson I learned. So I'm going in with a pack that's probably about a third heavier than it really should be. I was planning on being in there for a week. So I had a lot of gear, a lot of food. I was miserable. That hike in just about wrecked me. But I got in there finally. I got set up the next day. I put on about 10 to 12 miles, I want to say. I forget exactly what the breakdowns were. It's been a few years. But I put on a bunch of mileage, and on my way back that first day, I didn't see a blessed thing. All the sign was about a week old. The snow, I think, had pushed everything down lower. On the way back, I get about 500 yards from my tent and my left knee gives out completely. Like I can barely put any weight on it. So I make it back to the tent. I'm just thinking I overused it. You know, it was a rough pack in, too much weight, and I just overdid it that day. So I kind of rested. I took some vitamin I, ibuprofen, and, next day I was feeling pretty good. So I put on, I end up putting on, you know, somewhere between 7 and 10 miles that next day. About halfway through that, my left knee gives out again. So I'm favoring it the whole time. On the rest of the way back, because I'm favoring my left knee, my right knee ends up giving out as well. I didn't know at the time, but I'd torn the meniscus in both of my knees. And, you know, it's not as bad as like tearing an ACL or something, but it's not something that just kind of repairs itself. It's not like, oh, I overused it. If I rest a little bit and take some Advil, it'll be fine. No, this pretty much was bad news. And so
yeah, you can't ice away a torn meniscus. That's for sure.
Exactly. And you know, all you're going to end up doing is if you keep pressure on it, you're going to keep tearing it more and more. Well, you know, again, I didn't realize what it was. I thought it was just overuse, but I tried to push through it for like the next day and a half, 2 days. And finally I couldn't do it anymore. And I'd been using my InReach, now Garmin, at the time it was DeLorme, InReach, to text back and forth with some friends, experienced hunting friends and some family. And, you know, I was talking back and forth with them, getting some advice. And, my buddy Clayton, who I'd met again through social media, through the podcast, he had reached out and he was very familiar with the area. And he was kind of prepared to bring his horses in to help me pack out an elk if I got anything. Well, I finally messaged him and I'm like, hey man, I need you to come pack me out, because I was at the point where even without a pack, like without any weight in my pack, like just some food and water, I couldn't make it more than a mile without having to like just crash out for hours and let my knees kind of recover a little bit. And yeah, it absolutely destroyed me. And so he came in the next day and packed me out. And there's a really cool video of him coming in to make that rescue. I could email that over to you as well.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a really cool video he put together about that rescue, and you can kind of see the tail end of that. But that messed with me for a while. Like it wasn't it got me in my head. Like I got pretty dang emotional about it. More to myself, just because, you spend months like that preparing for something and it goes like that. It wasn't that I didn't get an elk, that I knew that the chances of me actually getting an elk were so minuscule. Wasn't even that I didn't see an elk. It was that I didn't get that hunt experience that I was looking for. I felt like I had failed. And, I look very differently. I look back very differently on that now. And I look at what I learned. And I mean, I'm super proud of the fact that freaking Orange County kid like rolled out into the middle of the woods. And, I had a plan. I had backup plans. I had connections and I was able to, able to get out of there. I had contingency plans for if something crazy happened. But yeah, that was my first hunt. And it's only gone uphill from there. there's not much more short of like grievous bodily harm. Like there's not much kind of more that I could have screwed up, but yeah.
No, it's pretty impressive though, man. Like you said, coming from Orange County, and that's kind of why I wanted you to tell a bit about that, because, it's important not to get discouraged. It would have been easy for you just to hang it up and said, fuck it, it's not for me. I tried it. This sucks. Blew both my knees out. Like you had so many, not excuses, but just reasons not to go back and do it. Right. And then now, the people who are listening can't see, but now you got a beautiful elk hanging on your wall. It kind of molds you into the hunter you become, is that you have to kind of go through those shitty circumstances and through the tribulations of those hunts. And yeah, man, good on you. That's cool.
I'm not gonna lie, like there's been a lot of times where I've wanted to just throw in the towel, and I've questioned, I'm like, is this, why am I doing this? What's the point after 3 years not killing anything and busting my ass? I'm like, am I just stupid for doing this? And I ask those questions, but I love it too much. And even on a smaller scale, not necessarily giving up hunting, but it's tough, man, being out there. You're out there for a few days, you're not seeing anything. It's tough not to just give up. And I've been there. I've given up tons of times. Like I'm not gonna sit and pretend like, oh yeah, I'm the mentally strongest man alive. I've never quit early on a hunt or this or that or the other. No, heck no, man. There've been lots of days where I'm like, yeah, I'm going to be out here for 3 days, and I'm just burnt out, and I may not like throw in the towel and go back to the hotel room or like go back to my truck. But there's a lot of times you can give up without leaving, mm-hmm. You can give up mentally and you're going through the motions, but you're not really hunting at that point. And, it's you got to realize you got to forgive yourself for doing that sometimes and just not do it next time. Learn from that. And honestly, it's not always bad. Like there's a difference also between like giving up completely and throwing in the towel and just being like, hey, I need to reset a little bit. Be like, go home, have a good beer at a local restaurant, get a burger in you, get a good night's sleep in a bed, and then come back and attack it again.
Exactly. Yep.
Go a little bit better, a little bit harder. But make those conscious decisions. Don't you can't go back just because it's hard. But if you do, forgive yourself, but just
be better. Learn from it. Yeah, definitely. Exactly, man. And I think, I've been through that lots. And like you said, it's funny because on my cougar this year, it took me 29 days to get that thing. And there was a good solid section of those days in the middle where I was kind of just going through the motions. I was just out there because I was just, you know, forcing myself to go out there, but I really wasn't giving it an honest effort. I was kind of just going through the motions, right? And then you kind of snap out of it and be like, okay, listen, I'm going to keep doing this shit unless I give her, right? And then, man, that's cool. It's cool to hear that for sure. One thing I wanted to ask you about, kind of getting off the topic of hunting, but, you know, going over your Instagram page and your social media stuff, you're going to see a lot of posts of you making knives and a lot of stuff about knives. Are you a knife smith?
I am. I mean, it feels kind of weird saying that because I still consider myself like ultra amateur. But I mean, I guess, you know, by all technical definitions, I'm a bladesmith. And I was actually having this discussion with a buddy, and everyone asked, like, oh, well, what's the right term? Are you a knife maker? Are you a bladesmith? Are you a forger? I'm like, well, you know, it kind of all depends on what you're asking. Like, you know, okay, yeah, I forge knives. I hand forge them. So yeah, I'm a bladesmith. I'm a knife maker. I am a blacksmith. I've done a little bit of that, but again, I'm super amateur at it. But yeah, I through the podcast, it's one of those things, like, I feel like you see, every dude at one time or another, like, sees a video on YouTube of somebody like making a knife or watches a movie or whatever it is. And you're like, that'd be cool to do something.
Oh yeah.
Like, definitely. I just want to make one. I feel like that's like a, and yeah, you know, not talking down to the women, whatever. I'm sure there's women out there that feel the same way. But like, I feel like that's such a dude thing. You're like, I want to make a knife. Like,
oh yeah. There's nothing more manly than making your own knife or your own sword or yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, that was always kind of in the back of my head, you know, one of those things I think would be cool. And I had Laura Zara on the podcast, and she's wild. Like, man, if you want to talk about some cool freaking people to have on your podcast and just quality people, just good human beings, Laura Zara is like at the top of the list. She's been, you know, she's best known. She's been on Naked and Afraid like 5 times. Anybody that like seriously watches the show is like, oh my gosh, she's like my favorite contestant every time. And she's just good people. She has a really interesting story, but she's that type of person. She like just disappears out into the wild for like 2 weeks straight. And she's like, oh, I'll be back later. Like, but she wrote a book on knife making, on bladesmithing. And it's kind of like a beginner's guide to getting into bladesmithing. And it was one of those things that kind of finally, it was the straw that broke the camel's back, if you will. It finally kind of got me into actually doing it. And so, you know, after moving out here to Montana, you know, I picked up a forge. I picked up some more tools and supplies and went through and made my first knife. And just like my very first hunt, god awful. It's like I look at it now, and I've made a few cleanups on it since then, but it was one of those things. I'm like, I made a knife. That's all I can claim is that it is a knife. But you know, since then, I've dedicated a lot of time to it. Met some really cool, very similar to my journey with hunting, where I've met some really, really cool people in this industry, and they've been super open, super generous with their time and their advice. And you know, I've started knocking out some cool shit, man. Like,
yeah, that's why I had to ask you about it, because I see you on there, man. You're turning old railway spikes into these super cool knives, and yeah, it's pretty neat.
I think, yeah, my favorite right now. So I posted a couple of them on the stories, but you know, I've got one that I worked on, and that's an old file that I've turned into this really cool kind of Viking Sax style knife. That I got to finish making a sheath for it. I'm going to do that one as a giveaway, like kind of a raffle giveaway, which I think that's just like one of my favorite pieces I've done. I did some cool stuff with it, and it just turned out like badass. But probably the favorite one that I'm working on right now is a buddy of mine who I actually used to teach rifle with. He was one of the instructors at this program, and he and I became very, very close buddies. And so he reached out, and he's like, hey, man, I want a Fairbairn Sykes style dagger. It's a World War II style fighting dagger. They're like freaking gnarly blades, like 7-inch long blade, you know, full taper. They're just a brutal hunk of metal and really cool looking dagger. And I'm like, and everyone that has asked, a lot of friends that have reached out and asked about custom blades and or buying some of the stuff I've made, and I've sold 5 or 6 of them. And I always remind him, I'm like, hey, you guys realize I've been doing this since like February, right? And they're like, we don't care, man. Just, you know, let us know, you know, we know what to expect. I'm like, all right, cool. And so, you know, I told him, I'm like, hey, I'll give it a try. If you want one, I'll give it a try. And every step along the way, making this thing has just been cool. It's turning out so badass. I just finished sharpening the blade profile. I think it's, you know, we're recording this, what, Friday, the very end of April here. And it's, you know, it's up on my story right now, and it's like looking so clean and so nasty. It's sharp as hell. And I can't wait to put a handle on this thing, get some pictures and share it with everybody. Cause the other problem I have is I make these things and I'm like making it for someone else, but then they turn out so cool. It's really, really hard for me to give away. Like,
you just want to keep them all. Yeah. They're pretty cool, man. No, I had to ask you about them cause I've been checking them out and they're super cool for sure. So are these knives, they're for sale?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I've got kind of a set of certain sets of knives that I'll make specifically for sale for anyone that wants them. I call them my sawed-off shotties or sawed-off shorties. They're like these little sheep's foot blades with kind of it's almost like a sawed-off shotgun pistol grip handle, like kind of that bulb at the end of it. It's just, they're cool little like utility blades. You know, everyone's a little bit different. The ones with the bigger bellies, they can be used for skinning, but it's just like an all-around good utility blade. Make these little leather sheaths with them. But I make those for sale, and I take commissions. I would love it if this turned into something. Right now I'm working on a few different commissions. I've got a skinning knife that I'm working on. I've got a whole set of, 8 steak knives that are, I'm really excited to turn those out. They're like antler handled rustic looking cool steak knives. I'm working on a Fairbairn Sykes dagger. And I actually had another buddy reach out when he saw that I was working on this dagger. He's like, hey, man, I've been watching this. Like, if it works out, I want you to make me one, too. He's a cop out in California, and he wants one for his SWAT kit. He wants like a really solid, like nice. Because for that, he's like, yeah, I need something for if somebody gets my gun or we're grappling or something happens. I need something that's going to be long enough to reach vitals. And he told me that. I'm like, oh, dude, that's kind of weird and kind of cool at the same time that like I'm making a knife that there's a good chance is going to like wreck someone's day. I'm like, there's like a part of me that's like kind of morbidly fascinated with that, like that little back of my mind. But then I'm also like, that's weird. That's weird that I might make something that's legit gonna into somebody, but I digress. But yeah, so I take commissions. You know, everyone needs to keep in mind that, you know, my skill level, but I do like to think I make some pretty sick shit.
Yeah, they're pretty they're pretty badass. And in Canadian folk, we can buy those as well.
Absolutely. Shipping will be a little bit more.
Yeah, always is. Dude, it's, you know, not the shipping, yeah. It's the border. They get us at the border.
Oh yeah.
So they just fucking hammer us.
Every time I've tried to send some to a friend, it's like, oh man, I regret not just having Amazon ship this.
Yeah. No doubt. Yeah, so where can we find them if we want to pick up a few?
Yeah, so I mean, eventually I'm hoping to be knocking enough of these out to where I can put them up on my website for sale. I'm actually working on some new merch and stuff. I haven't done merch since I rebranded. And I've got some really fun merch that's going to be coming out. Also some throwback Living Country in the City stuff for a lot of the folks that have been on my case that they missed out on the vintage gear. I've got some actually fun merch coming out. And then once I start getting more of the knives out and kind of get my store set back up again on my website, you'll be able to find them there. But in the meantime, I'm always just posting on my Instagram. You know, I'll be posting up a lot of times. It's just in a story. If I haven't made a post about it yet, but it'll be in posts, it'll be in stories. If you follow me at The Wild Initiative, on Instagram, you can find
that
all there.
Throw that in there too. Where do guys find you?
Yeah. Yeah. So, find me at The Wild Initiative on Instagram, on Facebook, on Twitter. I think it's like _ Wild Initiative. Pretty much if you just type in The Wild Initiative into any search bar anywhere, something about me will pop up. It's cool. I'm kind of on most every platform, and if you want to make sure you get an eye on those knives, make sure you turn on those post notifications. My Instagram is, it's a mixed bag. It's hunting, it's fishing, it's the podcast, it's bladesmithing. This morning you got a time lapse of me doing yoga because I have back and knee problems. Like,
does that help? My doctor told me that I should start doing yoga because I always go there and I'm always complaining about shit. I'm like, man, I got this hip pain, I got this knee pain, my shoulders, my elbows, and my hands. And he's like, wants me to do these flexibilities. He's like, man, you're stiff. You got to loosen up. You should go do some yoga. And I'm like, yoga.
Well, dude, and anybody that's like, yoga, there's a big difference between yoga and stretching. There's a lot of crossover, but if you're doing a serious yoga class, that'll kick your ass. A lot of these moves require significant muscle strength, balance, coordination, flexibility. There's some stuff in a serious yoga class that will absolutely wreck you. But it'll work on your flexibility. It'll help prevent injuries when you're up in the mountains, things like that. It's been huge for me. I'll usually do 10 to 20 minutes of yoga as a warm up. I'll do it after a workout as well. And then on top of that, I do very focused stretching, and it's huge, man. Before and after I go into the mountains, I always do 10 minutes of stretching. And it just, I've had bilateral knee surgery. I've used to ride a motorcycle in LA. I've been to the damn hospital more times, and I've got a bunch of titanium in me. I need as much help as I can get, not re-injuring myself when I'm on the mountain. And so I do a ton of stretching before and after, in the mornings when I'm going out, get my knees and my hips and my legs and my ankles and my back all worked out. So I'm not, pulling something. Cause how many times have you been out in the mountains? You're going up there and you got your pack's kind of heavy. You got your pack on, you turn your head funny, and you end up with that muscle that seizes up in the back of your neck.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
For the next 3 days, it just sucks even more than it already does. And so, yeah, that's been huge for me, man. A lot of functional movement. Yoga is great for that. It's being holistic. I know a lot of people roll their eyes at that shit, and it's like, oh, I'm just going to do squats and lift. And I mean, that stuff, yeah, that shit's important. That's really important. Strength. When you're trying to heft a elk quarter up onto your back, for sure. But, if that functional movement is what's going to, that's going to help you lift shit, but that functional movement is what's going to help you not get injured after you lift it.
I'm going to have to, maybe I'll have to download some beginner yoga, and I'll have to give it a whirl.
Honestly, what I've been using for a couple of years now, and it's been fantastic, is I signed up for the Peloton digital app, and they've got everything you could ever want in that damn thing. They've got all the cycling and run. They've got cycling classes, boot camp classes, running. And I wish I was sponsored by them because I've sold so many damn people on this thing. But they've got yoga classes, and they've got them, different different levels. You can start out just learning one move or one position, whatever it is, and then take a beginner class, and then take a more intermediate and an advanced class. And I still don't. I've taken one of the advanced classes. I'm like, screw this thing, man. I'm not nearly at that level. It just wrecked me. I was drenched in sweat. I could barely move after it. It was rough. But yeah, they've got all of that stuff. So if you're the type of person where you need a lot of those guided workouts, which I'm such an unfocused person a lot of the time that I need that instruction just to kind of keep me on track. And dude, they've got absolutely everything in that app, and it's $12 a month. It's freaking great. I love it. I don't know if you guys can get it up in the Great White North, but I assume so.
Trudeau probably banned that too with all the firearms and all the other shit. So who knows? But so you got a few other things going on over on your webpage. Give Waypoint Outdoors a quick plug.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Waypoint. I joined them. I'm trying to remember when I joined Waypoint, but it was a while ago. It's been over a year at this point for sure. But they are a podcast network. They reached out, and it's just a network of outdoor podcasts and, you know, podcasts of in a similar vein. There's a big variety of them on there, whether you're into saltwater fishing, fly fishing, you know, turkey and whitetail, you're into more like homesteading and nutrition kind of stuff. If you're into Western hunting, you know, there's just a huge mix of podcasts you can find on there. The Waypoint Outdoor Collective, you know, you can get a link to that in the podcast section on my website. I got them up there. Also got the blog on the website. You know, I don't blog a ton. I'm trying to get better at it. I'm trying to think what I have up there right now. I know I just released a blog talking about grip and grins recently. That was an important topic for me. You know, I'm one of those people. I'm not one of those people that's kind of like, okay, you know, you shouldn't post pictures of dead animals on your Instagram. And I'm not like we should kowtow to the antis, but I feel like there's appropriate ways to do it. And I mean, I've, you know, there's a whole article on there about that. And, you know, I've recorded practically entire podcast about it. Cause you can get into that stuff for days.
I kind of agree with you. There's a place and there's a time to post that stuff. And it's more so a place. You know, you got to keep it to your inner circles. And I'm the same way. I've talked about it tons of times, and we're not going to get into that because we'll be sitting here till tomorrow talking about that topic. So,
oh, without a doubt. But yeah, I got that up there. I've got recaps of a lot of my hunts. Wild enough, I can't believe I have not recapped in a blog my elk hunt. So I may have to do that at one point, but, yeah, you know, I've got a recaps of a few of like my first animals I've taken. I mean, I got a freaking Christmas cookie recipe on there because why not? You know, I talk about arrow builds. I talk about different stuff. And, you know, I never want people to think like I'm presenting myself as an expert in any of these topics because I'm not, dude. I've been hunting for 4 years. Like, yeah, that's more than many, but it's a lot less than most. And I mean, let's face it, even the guys at the top of their game, like you talk to Jim Shockey, he'll be the first one to tell you he's not an expert at anything. I feel like the more you learn, the more it's, you know, I'm sure that's an idiom or a saying by someone famous, but it's like the more you learn, the more you realize you don't know. And I never want to present myself as an expert. The whole point of my podcast is that I'm wanting to learn from these awesome people. And anything I share is something I learned. I either experienced myself and learned from a personal experience. Typically that comes in the form of doing something wrong, or it's something that I'm just sharing that was passed along to me by someone else. You know, I'm not ever trying to pretend like this is insight that I have in my wisdom, I have deigned to share with the peasant masses. No, it's, you know, I'm an idiot in the woods. Like, left and right, man. The first solo podcast I ever did was called More Things Not to Do in the Backcountry. Like, come on.
wildinitiative.com. That's where everyone can find you. A lot of great stuff on there. So anybody up here in Canada listening, go check Sam out. Okay, man, I had a whole slew of podcast questions I wanted to ask you, but unfortunately, we just ran out of time. Somebody will be yelling if I don't get back to work. So,
there you go. Yeah, and I know I won't shut up, so I'll I'll let you finish it.
Yeah, well, it'll leave a good segue opening for maybe a future podcast if you got time.
There we go, man. Anytime you want me back, I'm more than happy. But thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
You believe that? Wow. I guess it's all worth it.
You're listening to the Waypoint Podcast Network, brought to you in part by HuntStand, the number one hunting and land management app.
In Wild Country, rules were not created by man. Don't miss Wild Country, Wednesdays from 7 to 11 p.m. Eastern. Presented by Primos, speak the language. Waypoint TV, the destination for outdoor entertainment.